Welcome to episode 73 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for the week of June the 11th, 2007. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. On this week's episode of the Fredcast, some sad news about Greg LeMond's mother. A professional cyclist attempts suicide. A little bit of doping news. Pro Tour news. A couple of recalls. And the fourth annual World Naked Bike Ride. Following that, Cyclicious's Google Maps Street View contest and an interview with the organizer of the very first Fredcast Listener Cycling Tour. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. This episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by Cambria Bicycle Outfitter. Go to www.thefredcast.com, click the link at the top left-hand side of the page to find out how you can get special deals at Cambria Bicycle Outfitter just for listening to the Fredcast. Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, home of quality products, quality prices, and quality customer service. Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, they outfit the world. Welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. My apologies for being about 2 days late this week, and that's simply because I'm in the beautiful city of Las Vegas, Nevada, where it's about 105 degrees in the shade, and I'm at a trade show, so my voice is a little bit shot, and I'm a little bit behind. I know that you'll forgive me. Today's show is jam-packed with news, and following the news, you're going to want to stay tuned, because you're going to finally hear all of the details about the upcoming Fredcast listener tour in France this September 2007. So stay tuned for that. I'll be interviewing the gentleman from Hendrix Bicycle Tours who's planning this trip for all of you. There are a limited number of spots, so I'm going to tell you how you can get signed up and join me this September in France to ride the French Alps. I am totally looking forward to this one and can't wait for all of you Fredcast listeners to join us on this trip. Don't worry if you can't make this one. There will be others, but I think this is going to be one that you will not want to miss. But before we get into that, let's talk about the news, because there is a ton. The first bit of news this week is really, unfortunately, a bit of bad news, and I've got to report it because it's something that happens in cycling. And it started with a story that I put on thefredcast.com a few days ago. I have a contact within the folks who put on the Tour de Cure, which of course is the bicycle fundraising event that happens all over the country every year to help raise funds and awareness for the fight against diabetes here in America. And Greg LeMond has been closely associated with that organization, and he had planned this June to take part and participate in some of the Tours de Cure across the country. And now the organizers of these events sent out an email across their organization earlier last week that said, "It is with a heavy heart that I share with you this news. We just received notice that Greg LeMond's mother is gravely ill, and he's spending most of his hours at her bedside. She needs a liver transplant to recover, and the outlook is not good. He's canceled his Tour de Cure plans for the next weekend in Utah and other tours he had planned to attend." And then, of course, he had a personal note to the organizers that went out in this email. "And I'm sorry to report that Greg's mother lost her battle on June 1st, 2007. She was born February 14th, 1940, and she survived by her husband of 49 years, Bob LeMond, her daughters Kathy, Karen, and of course her son Greg LeMond, as well as her seven grandchildren. Now the family has asked that everyone educate their own family about organ transplantation and become an organ donor. That's, of course, easy to do. Usually do that on your driver's license. I've got that little orange dot on mine. And each organ donor can save 8 lives. In lieu of flowers, they'd like people to become organ donors and help support an organization called Donate Life America. And I'm going to put the URL into the show notes. Our condolences, our thoughts, and our prayers go out to Greg LeMond and his family in this great time of sadness." Well, unfortunately, the next bit of news is also a bit sad and a bit bizarre at the same time. You may know the name of Belgian cyclist Frank Vandenbroek. He has had a sensational and storied career. Now, he hasn't won a race since 2004, but in 1998, he won Gent-Wevelgem and Paris-Nice, then Liège-Bastogne-Liège in 1999. The problem is that in 2002, when police raided his home, they found EPO in his home. Yes, another doper, of course, and he was sentenced to 200 hours of community service. Apparently, all of this, as well as problems that he's had with his wife, have caused him to become quite depressed, and as a result, last week, he attempted suicide. Thankfully, he is recovering, and he will survive, and apparently he's also been quite a bit buoyed by the support that he's received. He said, quote, "The many messages of support that I received from my country gave me great pleasure. I don't want to give up. I want to race." He then went on to say, "For those who don't know anything about depression, it's difficult to understand what I've been through in the past few weeks, and in particular, the days leading up to Wednesday." That was the day that he attempted suicide. He said, quote, "I could no longer see any future. I wanted to put an end to my life." He then went on to say, quote, "I had time to reflect in hospital, and I thought that the right thing to do would be to return to Belgium to get better." Now, the strange thing about this was that at first it was reported that he had attempted suicide, and then it was reported, well, maybe he hadn't attempted suicide. Maybe those were just some harmless cuts that he put, I'm serious here, just some harmless cuts that he put into his wrists. In the end, I think that everyone now agrees that he did attempt suicide, and hopefully he's getting treatment for his depression. His wife, on the other hand, Sarah Vandenbroek, also came out with some statements last week where she was feeling that she wasn't getting enough attention for the depression and the difficulties that she has had as a result of living with Vandenbroek and the scandals associated with his doping. She made a lot of statements saying, quote, "Everyone is talking about Frank's depression and that he was abandoned, but nobody could believe what Margot, that's their daughter, and I have been through. Margot has seen things that a five-year-old should not have to see." So, of course, there's no doubt that this has been a very difficult family life for all of them, and I hope that everyone involved is getting the help that they need. It's never nice to see a marriage broken up. It's never nice to see a child in between, and, of course, anybody committing suicide, cyclist or not, is a bad situation. So hopefully everyone will get the support that they need, and we'll be hearing is positive things from the Vandenbroeks in the future. And how could we go three stories into the news without giving you just a little bit of doping? I promise, just a little bit this week, but I have no choice. First of all, Giro d'Italia just ended. We talked about that. Three cyclists tested positive for doping during the Giro, according to Gazzetta dello Sport. Two of the riders are Italian. One is Spanish. None are among the top finishers of the race for 2007. Two of them had high levels of salbutamol, which is a drug that's used to treat asthma, and one had a high testosterone level. Today, a Basque television network, EITB, announced that the one who had the high testosterone level was, according to this TV network, Spanish rider Iban Mayo. According to the article that I read about Mayo's supposed high testosterone level that was found, apparently he's been prone to testosterone variations in the past and that he's got a special file with the UCI as a result of these strange testosterone readings that occur naturally in his body. Of course, they'll then test the B samples to find out whether or not this is naturally occurring or not. So again, this is very, very early information. It sort of is very similar to what we saw last summer after the Tour de France. So don't jump to any conclusions. This is all very preliminary. Of course, as soon as more information comes out, I will let you know. Well, earlier I told you about Frank Vandenbroek and his attempted suicide, and that there were stories that said he did try, that he didn't try, that he did, and that it was a bit confusing in the week. And we had another story this week which was also equally as confusing, and I'm still trying to get my mind around exactly what happened. Originally, it was reported that the Belgian team Quickstep, that the members of the team, their homes had been raided by police, that they had raided 10 homes, and that they had found banned doping substances during these raids, and that 13 people were being detained. And all signals from all of the reports were that this was Quickstep. A Quickstep spokesman, Alessandro Tegner, said that that was absolutely not true. He said, quote, "To make it clear, this is not a Quickstep case, but a Belgian doping case dealing with amateur cyclists." A police spokesman said, quote, "A large quantity of doping products had been found. I cannot confirm any names." So someone in the media originally, because it was a Belgian team that was involved, I'm guessing that they assumed that this was Quickstep, and they jumped to a conclusion, and boom, it was out in the wires, and it was out in the newspapers and all over the internet. Looks like, however, that these were amateur cyclists that were involved, and that Quickstep was not. According to Tegner, quote, "I have just spoken to Tom Bonin, the famous Quickstep rider, and as far as he was concerned, there have been no raids on his house. I have also spoken to some other riders, and they've been training and unaware of anything going on. We'll have to wait and see what the prosecutors say." And that's exactly what's going to happen. We're going to have to wait and see if more information comes out. For right now, it doesn't look to me like it was a Quickstep thing. Looks to me like it was pretty much a non-story. But I just was worried that maybe if you heard something about it, that you were going to think, aha, here's another professional cycling team. At this point, it looks like perhaps it was amateurs. If we find out more, you know I'm going to let you know. And for the last of our doping stories tonight, see, I told you I was going to be mercifully short with the doping for the evening. More news on the Team Telecom fallout from all of those admissions about drug use within that team in the 90s. First, the former Telecom team manager, Walter Godefroot, has denied being involved in the doping of riders during the 90s. And I think that that's to be expected, right? He said, quote, "I did not organize any doping in our cycling team, nor did I finance it." Now, he's also threatened to sue the former massage therapist Jeff DeHaant, whose recent book detailed alleged drug misuse within the team and caused this cascade of admissions from former Telecom members. And of course, included in those Telecom members was former Tour de France champion Bjarne Riis. He has now been removed from the list of winners of the Tour de France after his admission of using performance-enhancing drugs. According to Tour spokesman Philippe Soudre, quote, "We've removed him from the list because of the doping admission. We consider philosophically that he can no longer claim to have won." Now, what we talked about before is the fact that Jan Ulrich finished second in 96, but there have been some drug allegations in regards to Ulrich as well, so there is no indication that he will officially become named as the Tour winner. According to the Tour spokesman, it's up to the UCI to formally revoke Riis's title, which would be the first time that a drug offense has caused someone to lose their title as winner of the Tour in 104 years. But you may recall that a week or so ago, I mentioned that the UCI said that the statute of limitations for sanctioning Bjarne Riis has expired. At the same time, that's the same organization that urged him to return his yellow jersey. So I have no idea whether or not this is going to be official, other than the fact that the organizers of the Tour have taken him off the list. And then finally, we talked about Eric Zabel. Eric Zabel, who's confessed also to using blood-boosting drugs when he rode professionally for Team Telecom during the 96 Tour de France, has decided that he will not go for a spot on the German Olympic team in next year's Beijing Olympics. He said that he doesn't want to, quote, "burden the Olympic team with his doping past." I frankly applaud him for doing that, because to me, the Olympics is about the purity of sport, and doping in sports, well, I think that you know my opinion on that. All these doping scandals have rocked the world of cycling, as we've talked about before, and now it appears that it's rocking the world of broadcasting as well, as T-Mobile has withdrawn as the official television sponsor of the Tour de France on Germany's two public stations. All of this as a result of the Team Telecom admissions. Remember, Team Telecom is now known as T-Mobile. Now, T-Mobile is going to continue sponsoring the team, but the two networks, ARD and ZDF, confirmed last week that the deal that T-Mobile is pulling out of was worth $1.33 million. According to T-Mobile spokesman Christian Frommert, the money, that $1.33 million, is going to go into anti-doping efforts. Meanwhile, all 20 Pro Tour teams have now been called to a special meeting to be convened in Geneva on June the 19th. The meeting was called by the UCI in advance of the Tour de France, and they did not set a specific agenda. According to Team Gerolsteiner's manager, Hans-Michael Holzer, quote, "There is no set agenda. It's about the image of cycling. I'm expecting before the tour starts that something big will happen." Now, of course, something big happened last year when over 50 cyclists were implicated in the Puerto scandal, and so many big names, so many contenders in last year's Tour de France were not allowed to participate in the race. It sounds like, from the noise that's coming out of the Pro Tour, that there's a possibility that the UCI has now gone over those thousands and thousands of pages in the Spanish district attorney's dossier about the Operation Puerto affair, and that they may be announcing which riders were named in that report, and therefore which riders will not be allowed to participate in the Tour de France. We'll see what happens with this one. This has, once again, the possibility of dropping a bomb in the middle of the Tour de France. This time, at least, it's in June instead of the day before the race begins. Well, speaking of the Tour de France, what is the traditional warm-up for the Pro Tour riders before every Tour de France every year? It's the Dauphiné Libéré, which is taking place right now, June the 10th through the 17th in France. Last year, it was voted the best organized UCI Pro Tour event, and everyone who takes part in this event always praises the racing, the roads, and even the hotels where the riders stay after each stage. Now, one of the things we're going to talk about a little bit later is the Fredcast Listener Tour, which is taking place in the area that the Dauphiné Libéré is going through this year in France, and it will include two great climbs from this race, the Col du Télégraphe and the far, far better known Mont Ventoux. And the Mont Ventoux stage occurs tomorrow in stage number 4 of this year's Dauphiné Libéré. But first, let's talk about the stages that have already occurred. Sunday's prologue was a 4.2-kilometer individual time trial. It was won by Britain's Olympic gold medalist Bradley Wiggins. He won by 1 second over Levi Leipheimer, last year's winner, and 2 seconds over Andrei Kazechkin of Kazakhstan and American George Hincapie. He said that he felt that the victory had given him a lot of confidence in advance of the Tour de France prologue, and he said, quote, "Before this year, I couldn't say I was a favorite for London." Remember, the Tour de France is starting in London this year. "I hadn't got the results on the road for that, but now I am one of them. I can be confident of at least making the top 5 or perhaps even the top 3. If I thought I was just going to do an average ride in London, then I'd prefer not to race and go on holiday. But I think maybe I'm in the best form of my life. After this win, I can go into the Tour feeling more relaxed." Stage 1 of this year's event was a 219-kilometer stage that went from Grenoble to Rouen, and although Bradley Wiggins did not win this stage, it was won by German Heinrich Hausler of Gerolsteiner, who just beat out Tom Bonin in the sprint at the finish. Despite that, Wiggins retained his 1 second lead over Levi Leipheimer. But that was not to continue for long when, in stage 2, a 97.5-mile stage, which was won by Christophe Moreau from France, he just barely beat out José Antonio Redondo, who took second place, and as a result, Moreau took over the leadership of the race, leaving Wiggins behind. But Moreau's leadership of this year's Dauphiné Libéré was to be short-lived when in today's individual time trial, Alexander Vinokourov took the race 9 seconds faster than his Astana teammate Andrei Kazechkin and 38 seconds faster than American Dave Zabriskie to take over the lead of this year's Dauphiné Libéré. So tomorrow's event, the fourth stage of the event, is on Mont Ventoux. I'll have all of the results of that stage as well as all of the other stages when we next talk again on the Fredcast. But at this point, the standings in the general classification after 3 stages and the prologue of this year's Dauphiné Libéré: in first place, Alexander Vinokourov. Second, Andrei Kazechkin, 2 seconds behind. Third, American Dave Zabriskie, 32 seconds behind. In fourth place, Denis Menshov from Russia, 40 seconds behind. In fifth, Cadel Evans from Australia, 41 seconds behind. And in sixth place, last year's race winner, Levi Leipheimer, 1 minute and 3 seconds back. Well, getting away from racing for this week's show, I've got some news for those of you who might have some higher-end Cannondale bicycles, specifically several models, which I'll get into in a moment. Cannondale is recalling these bikes, the ones that have carbon cranksets, because apparently the cranksets could break, and you could fall, go boom, and get hurt. So listen up, because if you have one of these bikes, it's time for you to take your bike into your Cannondale dealer, get it checked out, and get a free replacement. All right, here we go. 2007 road bikes, the Synapse Carbon SL1 Compact Drive, the Ironman 1 SI Carbon Standard Drive, the System 6 Team 1 Compact and Standard Drive, the System 6 Team 3 Compact and Standard Drive, and the Cyclocross SLI 1 Compact Drive. 2007 mountain bikes, the Touring 1 SL and the Rush Carbon 2. Now, if you bought a 2007 frame set with a crank and it was a Synapse SL-SI, a System 6 Team SL, an Ironman 613 SL, a CAAD 9 Cyclocross SI, and all carbon SI road and mountain cranksets. For 2008, if you have a System 6 Liquigas 3 compact or standard drive road bike, then yours is covered by the recall as well. These bikes were sold at authorized Cannondale dealers around North America from June 2006 through May 2007. They retailed for between $1,800 and $5,700 for the bikes and about $475 for the cranks. If you're interested in information and who to contact, you can call Cannondale at 1-800-BIKE-USA. That's 1-800-245-3872. You can visit their website at www.cannondale.com, or I've put links in the show notes. Now, if you are in New Zealand, you should also listen up because there's been a recall there as well. The Warehouse has recalled one of its bicycle helmets, saying that there's a risk that the inner liner may detach from the plastic shell, and it wants all of its customers who bought an HUD bicycle helmet in the last year to return it to their nearest Warehouse store, and you'll receive a full refund or a replacement helmet. So please stop riding with that helmet. The last thing you want is a helmet that doesn't work. Well, here I am in Las Vegas for a trade show, and it has nothing to do with the bicycle industry, but I've got Interbike on the mind for several reasons. And first and foremost is a press release that I received late last week announcing that Interbike is going to be the presenting sponsor of the World Criterium Championships, which will be held right here in Las Vegas, Nevada, on Thursday night, September 27th, 2007. Coincidentally, that's day two of the Interbike International Bicycle Expo being held right here in Las Vegas, Nevada. The World Criterium Championship is the final race in the 10-city 2007 USA Crits Championship Series and will be held at the Mandalay Bay Resort here in Las Vegas, and that's going to be very close to Interbike's home at the Sands Convention Center. According to Interbike show director Lance Kamasaska, quote, "Each year, we consider several after-hours events to entertain show attendees, and this year, we're excited to support the World Criterium Championship, a world premier bike race. Besides it being a great event for the industry, it will also be a great event to promote cycling in Las Vegas as well as nationally with lots of media attention." And I've talked to a lot of people who are going to the show this year. They're looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it. And another reason, of course, that I'm looking forward to Interbike, and we'll talk about this as it gets closer, is that my other podcast, or one of my other podcasts, the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast, we've now decided that we're going to be recording a live version of our show. This will be the first time that we will all be together in the same room. I decided that what a great time this will be to put microphones in front of all of us, chance to talk to each other about cycling, about what we've seen at the Interbike show, and to have guests from around the world of cycling to come onto the Spokesman and join the roundtable with us for one day. So if you're going to Interbike, I'll have more details about that coming up soon, right here on the Fredcast, as well as on the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. I'm wondering, what do you do when you're finished with a really, really tough ride and your muscles are aching? Well, if you're like a lot of athletes, one of the things that you might do is you might use one of these rubs that's available on the market with names like Bengay or Icy Hot, and you put it on your aching muscles, and it soothes them with heat and with some chemicals that really make your muscles feel a lot better. Well, if you are one of those people who uses one of these products, you might want to consider using them a little bit more sparingly, and here's the reason why. A medical examiner in New York blamed the death of a 17-year-old track star on the use of too much of this muscle cream. Ariel Newman, who was a cross-country runner at Notre Dame Academy on Staten Island, died after her body absorbed high levels of the chemical methyl salicylate. And by the way, I did that with one take, folks. And that's the anti-inflammatory that's found in these sports creams that we've been talking about. The spokeswoman for the medical examiner's office said that this was the first time that her office had reported a death from using these sports creams. Apparently, however, chronic use of these creams can be quite dangerous. This according to Edward Arsura, who's the chairman of medicine at Richmond University Medical Center. He told the Staten Island Advance newspaper that, quote, exercise and heat can accentuate absorption. So we've got to be careful when we use these creams. Use them sparingly. If you have to use them, that's fine. But what the articles seem to indicate is that if you use them over and over and over, day after day after day after day, you may be somebody who might absorb too much. And that could lead to a very negative, or as in this case, a most tragic reaction. Hey, do you remember that a couple months ago we talked about the fact that Colorado was going to have Share the Road license plates? Well, now that Governor Bill Ritter has signed that bill, before the state begins production, they need at least 3,000 pre-orders. So what does that mean? If you're a cyclist in Colorado, right away, go to the link that I've put in the show notes so that you can pre-order your official Colorado Share the Road license plates. Now, there's going to be a $25 contribution to the Share the Road Education Fund that will qualify you to purchase the plates, and that's going to support bicycle safety education programs in Colorado. So the new plates will be available for pickup beginning in January of 2008, and a receipt will be provided for tax records so that you can make sure that you get your write-off. But if you're a cyclist in Colorado, number one, I'm jealous of the fact that you live in Colorado, but number two, I'm now jealous of the fact that you can get your own Share the Road plates. So don't wait. Press pause right now on the show. Go to the show notes at www.thefredcast.com and click the link in the show notes to pre-order your Colorado Share the Road plates. Congratulations. Well, here's a story that I found over on my old friend Carlton Reed's website at bikebiz.com. And it's interesting because it brings together cycling and skateboarding. And I'm going to get to that in a minute. You've probably heard the name Tony Hawk. Tony Hawk, I mean, he's ubiquitous these days. He's all over the place. Tony Hawk is perhaps the world's most famous professional skateboarder. And he is now lending his name to a brand of bicycles, which will be created by the bicycle company Dynacraft. They have entered into an exclusive licensing agreement with Tony Hawk to produce Tony Hawk branded bicycles. From what I've read, there will be two different lines of these bikes. One which will be sold in mass market retailers, typically Kmart's, Walmart's, Costco's, things like that. And another brand which will be a higher end brand and will be sold in your local bike shop. According to Tony Hawk, quote, I'm looking forward to a long and successful partnership with Dynacraft. Their expertise in bike design and technology has made them a leader in their industry. Together, we'll develop unique lines of Tony Hawk Huck Jam bikes that will excite the most discerning consumers. Now, why did I mention that there's this new connection between skateboarding and cycling? Well, it's because the indications are that there's a chance that skateboarding might be allowed to become an Olympic sport as early as 2012. Carlton certainly has his opinion about that. I have mine, and I'm sure we're going to be talking about this on a future version of the Spokesman podcast. But just suffice it to say that there's a place for certain sports in the Olympics, and there's a place for certain sports in the X Games, and I don't think that those lines should become blurred. I think that Carlton probably agrees with me. We'll see what other spokesmen think about it when we talk about it on a future show. And finally tonight, and I hope you'll forgive me for not talking about this on one of my upcoming rides or upcoming events sections, but last Saturday, hundreds of naked cyclists, some sporting some strategically placed body paint, went through the streets of London and other cities around the world to protest oil dependency and what they called, quote, the car culture. According to Reuters, traffic came to a standstill and onlookers gaped or took photographs as the bare cyclist streamed past London's landmarks, blowing whistles, waving flags, and saying, "Rights for bikes." There were cyclists in Paris, Madrid, Vancouver, and cities all over the world joined what is now termed the fourth annual World Naked Bike Ride. According to one Polish cyclist, quote, "We shouldn't be so dependent on oil." He was wearing just a baseball cap. One cyclist, Rebecca Craig, who is a student midwife, had red handprints painted on her breasts. She said she'd been motivated to join the ride after the front tire of her bike was stolen. She said, quote, "Everyone does it for different reasons." And then she pointed to her back where she had written, "Give my wheel back." Now, organizers of the London ride said about 850 people had taken part last year and that they had hoped for more than 1,000 on Saturday. French television said that around 400 cyclists attended the ride in Paris. Police arrived quickly on the scene, putting an end to the rally and telling riders to put their clothes on. Police said five people were arrested for sexual exhibition after the rally, which ended near the Opera Building in central Paris. I have a feeling that giving out citations for sexual exhibition is a bit like giving out citations for speeding at the Indy 500.
We came to see naked girls.
Oh my God! She's stark raving naked!
And that is the end of the news for this episode of the Fredcast. So, I don't know how many of you use Google Maps. It's something we've talked about before. We always talk about Google Maps mashups all the time. Well, Google Maps recently came out with a new feature called Street View. Now, if you haven't seen Street View, and it's been all over the media since they came out with it, what it is the folks from Google went out and took photographs at street level of several cities around the world, including San Francisco, New York City, and others. And there will be future cities that will be also mapped in this way. So that, for instance, let's say you want to find a particular location and you know the address, you put it into Google Maps, and up until this point you could see a map, or you could see a satellite view or a hybrid view of both, but now you can zoom all the way down to street level and you can literally take a walk or a drive around the city and see exactly the way everything looks. Well, one of the controversies with Google Maps has been the fact that they've caught people going about their ordinary lives, and there have been certain privacy concerns that have arisen as a result of these photos. Well, over on Cyclicious, and of course we talk about the Cyclicious blog here all the time, it's one of my favorites. Over on Cyclicious, they had a contest, and the contest was to see who could find the best bicycle-related photo among these frozen-in-time images that are being used on Google Maps Street View. Now, the contest is over, but I understand that a winner will be announced soon, and I'd recommend that you go to the show notes, find the link for the Cyclicious blog, and keep your eye on it, because I have no doubt that we're going to see some great pictures that were taken by the Google people. And I think kudos to Cyclicious for coming up with a great contest. I think it's a great idea, and I can't wait to see the images. Now, before I bring you the interview with Herman Hendricks, the owner of Hendricks Bicycle Tours, who's going to tell you about the upcoming Fredcast listener tour, just one quick note. As you may know, this week, the Race Across America began. Now, if you're not familiar with the Race Across America, it is exactly what it sounds like. It is a bicycle race that starts in Southern California and goes all the way to the East Coast. And it's going on right now. And there's several divisions going on in the race. There's a men's solo race, a women's solo race, a two-person team race, a four-person team race, and a corporate challenge race. Now, a very good friend of mine is on the crew of a two-person team, Team Beat Cancer. And I'm hoping that over the next few days And over the next week, I'll be able to bring you some updates from out there on the road. Now, there may be some technical glitches, and I haven't gotten an update from them yet, so I'm hoping that I will, and I'm hoping that I'll be able to bring those updates to you. But if I can't bring them to you during the race, I'll certainly have a chance to interview those people who were participating as the two-person team for Team Beat Cancer in the race across America. I can tell you that as of right now, I'm recording this at about 11:30 p.m. Wednesday, June the 13th, and the race is ongoing. Leading the men's solo is Jur Robic, currently in Montezuma, Kansas. Leading the women's solo sitting in Durango, Colorado is Carrie White. Leading the two-person teams is Team Body Exchange Garden Pathways in Kayenta, Arizona. For the four-person teams, it's Beaver Creek Catlin Team. They're in Montezuma Creek, Utah. And leading the corporate challenge, Team Type 1, monitored by Freestyle in Montezuma Creek, Utah. Good luck to all of the competitors out there. I hope that Team Beat Cancer will be able to give us some reports from on the road, and I'll bring them to you certainly as soon as I get them. Okay, so it's the moment you've all been waiting for. It's time for me to finally tell you just a little bit about the upcoming Fredcast Listener Tour. As I've already told you, it's going to take place September 2nd through the 9th. The tour is being produced and hosted and prepared for us by Hendrix Bicycle Tours. I went with Hendrix because they are a small company, and they were able to custom make the tour just for Fredcast listeners. It's going to be... well, it's going to be a challenging week, but it's going to be some of the most beautiful cycling I can imagine as we do the French Alps, including the Alpe d'Huez, and we do Provence and the beautiful area around there, including Mont Ventoux. So I did an interview a few days ago with the owner of Hendrix Bicycle Tours, and I thought that we would let him tell you a little bit about the trip, and then, of course, we'll have more information as the days and weeks go by. But the most important thing is it's going to be limited to 20 Fredcast listeners. So if you're interested in participating in the tour with us, please make your reservations now, and you'll hear all about that in the interview. Yes, I am going. And I have not been on my bike lately. I've been preparing for this trade show, and I'm feeling it. And I know that with just 3 months to prepare, I better get back on my bike and get to training. And over the next few weeks, we'll get some people on the show who can talk to you about training for this trip. But the most important thing at this point is to get your reservations in early, because I expect that this will sell out very quickly. So here's my interview with Herman Hendrix from Hendrix Bicycle Tours. He's going to tell us about the Fredcast Famous Climbs of the Tour de France coming up September 2nd through the 9th in France. I thought that before we got into the details of the trip itself, perhaps you might be able to tell the audience just a little bit about you and about your company and how you got started doing cycle tours in Europe.
Well, my name is Herman Hendrix. I'm from Holland, but I consider myself to be European. I work in most of Western and Middle Europe and Southern Europe, from Portugal to Poland, from Ireland to Sicily. I run trips there as a goal, even more than 15 years, 20 years ago now. I couldn't find a job in my professional work. I am a historian. I have quite a degree, teaching qualifications, everything. And when I tried to find an alternative job, I ended lecturing for an organization called Elder Hostel. And then 3 years later, I was fully working as a bicycle guide and a lecturer, and a few years later, I was running my own company with bicycle trips all over Europe. We run around 25 to 30 trips a year, various destinations, various groups, various guides, some a little bit harder, some a little bit tougher, and as I said, in a lot of European countries.
Well, speaking
that's
of
it in the background.
Yeah, speaking of a little bit harder and a little bit tougher, we approached you about putting together a trip for the Fredcast, and I felt that Fredcast listeners probably were looking for something a little bit tougher. Why don't we tell them a little bit about the trip that we have planned for them coming up this September?
Well, I named this trip the Fredcast Famous Climbs of the Tour de France. The Tour de France, as you know, is the most famous European race, and it is the highlight of and the dream, I would say, of any bicyclist to see the race, but also to do a few of these climbs. They're in the middle of Europe. The French Alps are close to Italy, close to Switzerland. And we planned a trip which focuses on the main two highlights all over well, all through the history of that Tour de France, the Alpe d'Huez and the Mont Ventoux. They have not been in the schedule for quite a while in the Tour, but we all remember the names. We all remember, I think, Annie as the fastest fellow of the Alpe d'Huez. I think then it was Armstrong, who was only a second slower than Pantani, but this was in a time race, so I think he was just as good. And then there's the Mont Ventoux, which is more in the south. It's actually in the Provence, part of the French Alps. What we have done with the trip is we planned it for a week, starting on if you leave the United States on a Saturday, then it starts on the Sunday here. 3 nights, so time to get adjusted to the time change and to the terrain. 3 nights, the first 3 nights in the middle of the Alps, then with a climb up the Alpe d'Huez, then a reasonable day, about 100 kilometers to a hotel where we stay for one night, then a long day, almost 100 miles to a hotel in the south, and at that last hotel we also stay for 3 nights. From there on, we go for a day right up the Mont Ventoux, and one day should be a little bit easier to relax and to see more of that particular area, and then it's back to Marseille Airport. By the way, it starts at Lyon Airport and then it ends at Marseille Airport.
So for the people that are coming, they could come a few days early if they like, maybe spend some time in Paris, perhaps take the train or a flight down to Lyon. And then from there, we end at Marseille, which is in the south of France. And if they want to relax a little bit, maybe go to the beach, they could certainly hang out in Marseille for a little while, couldn't they?
Oh, yes, of course. Paris is a nice town, so you could fly into Paris and then take a fast train to Lyon. Lyon to itself, famous for the ancient quarter in the heart of town, which is nice historical area. Also very good food. It's considered to be one of the best towns for eating in the whole of France. Marseille is an ancient port. Recently it's been done up quite a bit. It's quite interesting. If you have a few more days, you could go to the Riviera, which is the French coastline, which at this time of the year should be extremely attractive.
Let's get back to the trip for a moment. You talked about the Alpe d'Huez, and that is a very, very famous climb. And I'm aware from our conversations that there's an option where when you get just to the base of the Alpe d'Huez, you pick up a little RFID transponder tag, and they time you going up to the top of Alpe d'Huez. So I suppose we're going to have a bit of a competition among the Fredcast listeners, aren't we?
I think so. But this climb in the Tour de France is usually the end of a stage, so it all builds up for the races in the Tour de France. They will be tired, and then it is uphill for the last 14 kilometers. That is about 9 miles. We are going to go from the hotel a warm up ride, mostly downhill for about 20-25 k. Then we will get ready to get the timing organized so we can time how we are doing it. And then there's a gradient for about 8%. So that is tough, with the 21 famous hairpin bends. And that's interesting. They are all numbered, so you can actually see how you are doing. And in the beginning, it's okay. But then number 2 and 3, it goes down from 22, are really, really very strenuous. And then at the end is the village of Alpe d'Huez. At the bottom is all the famous riders have been here. At the bottom are statues of Coppi, the famous Italian rider, and is Armstrong. And then along the way, every one of those is named after a famous rider, every hairpin.
Mm. Now, besides the Alpe d'Huez, of course, there's a few nice cols that we'll be doing. Tell us about some of those.
Out of that very first hotel, we also plan, as one of the very first rides, to do the Col du Telegraph. That one isn't that high. It is still around 1,500 meters, but it's easy to approach it from one side, and we are going to do that approach on the very first day of riding. It's also that the planned hotel is located at 1,400 meters. Here in Europe, we count everything in meters, but so that's 4,200. So it isn't too bad. After that, that Col du Telegraph is the Col du Galibier. Maybe you and your listeners know that call. That's the one where they still, it's like graffiti sprayed on the street, where still the names from previous competitors in the race are on the asphalt. Probably for that day, enough riding. When then on another day, of course, we climbed that Alpe d'Huez, then on the somewhat longer ride, though it shouldn't be too strenuous, is two main calls. One is the call du Lauterais, which is more with the Galibier, but because it's also close to the hotel, the height difference isn't that far. Then out of Briançon is the call du Isoard, and that is quite a neck breaker, or whatever you call that. It is where one of the stages of the Giro ended this year, but coming from the other way. And then there are no more mountains for that day, basically because we are going south, but everything is a little bit lower. This southern area is called the Provence, known for its historical towns, for its herb smells and spices and all that. And in the middle of this Provence area is this Mont Ventoux. And surrounding it are a few hills, cols, but none of them really gets above 1,000 meters. It's only that particular one, which is right in the middle there. And that is a really interesting and beautiful area, quite a challenge.
So the trip is 8 days and 7 nights. It begins September 2nd in Lyon and ends September the 9th in Marseille. Herman, what's the price of the trip, and tell everybody what's included?
The price of the trip is $2,500 if you're sharing a room. There's a supplement of $500 if you're on your own and you don't have a roommate and we cannot match you up with somebody, then there's no charge at all. Included in the trip price is the bus transfer from Lyon to the first hotel. At the end of the trip is a bus transfer from the last hotel to Marseille. There are 7 nights lodgings in nice hotels, about French three-star hotels, which will be comfortable, which have a lot of facilities for bikers. We plan to stay in a hotel where the U.S. Discovery and Postal team stayed. And towards the end, we come to a hotel which is particularly famous for its very good restaurant. Talking about food, out of these 7 nights, we plan 5 group dinners in the evenings with great French food, of course, with wine with the meal, and day for the lunches. On also 4 or 5 days, we will set up lunches for the riders along the way, with the local specialty, cold cuts, but also a lot of fruit and so on. All breakfast are included. We will have, in the beginning of the trip, get together, talk about it, have a welcome drink. Then once it gets rolling, we will have 3 guides, out of which at least 2 will be on the bicycle riding with the group. Then depending on the group, we'll drive an extra support van or also ride certain stretches with the group. And we'll have a large support van with the trailer in, and the mechanic, who's also the driver, who will carry supplies. We have picnic tables, little tripod chairs, water containers, extra wheels, tubes, the material which we need for the bike trip. And that's basically it.
And now when we talked about just doing perhaps 4 or 5 lunches, one of the reasons for that, Herman and I discussed, was, for instance, when you get to the top of Alpe d'Huez, you know, you're probably going to want to explore a little bit and take a look at the village there. Great place to just stop and have lunch on your own. So it's not that we went cheap on you. It's that we wanted to make sure that you had the ability to really see the culture and immerse yourself in some of these very, very famous cycling areas. And, of course, even the days that we won't be providing lunch, we'll have water and fruit and snacks and things like that on the support van. So you're always going to be supported on the trip. Well, Herman, this sounds like a fantastic trip. I personally am looking forward to it. And as I understand, we have a limit of 20 participants, so people need to get signed up quickly. We're going to be setting up a special website for this. But in the meantime, if they'd like to contact your company to get on the list and get signed up for the trip, how can they do that?
Well, they can phone us, or they can send us an email. They could send an email to info@hendrikstours.com, or they can contact us through our 800 number, 800-852-3258.
So the email address, one more time, is info@hendrikstours.com. That's HINDRIKS. And if you'd like more information about Herman's company, of course, you can go to their website at www.hendrikstours.com. And Herman, thank you so much for joining us on the Fredcast and for organizing what sounds like it's going to be a fantastic trip. We are all looking forward to seeing you in September in France.
Thank you very much. I can promise you a fantastic trip.
Excellent. Thank you, Herman. So there you go. It's the Fredcast Famous Climbs of the Tour de France. you just have to know how much I'm looking forward to this trip, to be able to interact on such a personal level with you, the Fredcast listener, to have the opportunity to experience this amazing country with such a great cycling heritage, to do the Alpe d'Huez with you, to do Mont Ventoux with you, to enjoy the dinners and the lunches and some amazing, fantastic camaraderie with you, the listener. I'm really looking forward to this. So once again, the Hendrix Tours website is hendrixtours.com, H-I-N-D-R-I-K-S tours.com. You can send them an email at info@hendrixtours.com, or you can call them toll-free at 1-800-852-3258, 800-852-3258. And the prices that Herman mentioned do not include your airfare, so keep that in mind. Looking forward to having 20 of you on this trip. Rest assured that we're, besides the months that we've spent planning this trip, we're also working on, so far, at least two trips for 2008. So we hope that you'll join us on this one, as well as on our trips next year. This is just the next chapter in the Fredcast, taking it beyond the podcast and interacting directly with you and enjoying some great cycling together. I hope you'll join us for the Fredcast Famous Climbs of the Tour de France. And if you don't join us, we will be covering it in its entirety here on the Fredcast, so at least you'll be able to join us virtually. Looking forward to having all of you along for the ride. Well, before we head out tonight, just wanted to give you a couple of upcoming rides and events, and I'm continuing the Utah trend this week, just like last week. I've got four great rides that you might want to consider in Utah in August and September of this year. The first, the Desperado Duel, which takes place August the 4th. And this gives you the option of a double century or a 100-mile single century. This takes place in what's called Utah's Color Country. It starts in Panguitch, Utah, which is in the southwest corner of the state near Zion National Park and Bryce Canyon National Park. Last year, there were about 370 riders from 12 states that participated in the 2006 Desperado Duel. So if you're looking for a double century to do, this might be a great one to consider. On August 11th, the following weekend, it's Ulcer, also known as the Utah Lake Century. Utah Lake is sort of the, well, I guess the stepchild of the Great Salt Lake. When you look at a map of Utah, you see that big Great Salt Lake. And just to the south of it, there's a smaller lake. That's Utah Lake. And the Utah Lake Century goes all the way around, what else? Utah Lake. A couple of weeks later, on August the 26th, it's the Cache Valley Century. And then on September 22nd, the Heber Valley Century. Both of these are in and around the Salt Lake and Park City and Ogden areas of Utah. So if you're in Utah or if you'd like to go to Utah, I'm just continuing my trend, trying to give you as much information about cycling in Utah as I can. Don't ask me how I got on this kick. I suppose at some point it will be explained, but in the meantime, just consider it Utah month. Well, that's going to do it for the show. I hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you for listening and thank you for staying subscribed and thank you for voting for us on Podcast Alley and for telling your friends or for writing a review on iTunes. We appreciate that very much. I love getting your emails. Please keep them coming. Our email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. And of course, a lot of you have found out about following us on Twitter. You might want to give that a try. And what's been great, and I have to thank all of you, while I have been enduring this trade show this week, you've been sending me the greatest Twitter messages. It's been really fantastic. So if you don't know about Twitter, go ahead and check it out. It's www.twitter.com. And if you want to follow mine, it's twitter.com/Fredcast. And of course, I'm also showing my live Twitter updates at www.thefredcast.com. If you'd like to send us an audio comment, please use the listener hotline at area code 206-203-FRED. Well, it's time for our PodSafe cycling music tonight, and again, continuing the Utah trend, tonight's music comes to us, as it always does, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Tonight's song is by The Dwarves, and it's called, guess what? Salt Lake City. You can find links in the show notes to where you can find The Dwarves on PodShow, on iTunes, as well as on their own website. That's going to do it for me for tonight. I will be back at a minimum next week. But again, if I can bring you some RAM updates, I'll be bringing those to you even sooner. Until then, enjoy your week. Enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride.
There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you, except the one thing that you want me to. We went across the mighty Rio Grande and saw Disneyland and the sea, you and me. But there's one thing I never do, not even for you, not even for you. Not even for you. I'm not going to Salt Lake City. I'm not going to Salt Lake City. I'm not going to Salt Lake City. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you, except to walk among the Osmond crew. I know you're planning for a laugh today, and you can't betray what you know in Provo. But there's one less town on the globe, and if you must go there, you're going alone. Not even for you. Not even for you. Not even for you.